Welcome to Skin Deep here on SiriusXM Radio Channel 141 HUR Voices. I'm your host, Sharon Morton. And as always, I'm really happy to be here and have you listening from all over the world. Today we have on the show world-renowned author, educator, poet, and award-winning speaker, Dr. Omokongo Dominga. I hope I pronounced that correctly. He just told me right before we came on, so I'm sure he'll correct me once he gets on the show. He is a modern day Renaissance man. His life's mission is to inspire everyone across the globe to take a stand when they witness an injustice, no matter how small. Dr. Dabinga's most recent book, called Lies About Black People: How to Combat Racist Stereotypes and Why It Matters, is a number one bestseller. Dr. Dabinga argues in the book that we must embark on a massive undertaking to re-educate ourselves on the stereotypes that have proven harmful and often deadly to the Black community. His book breaks down some of the most powerful lies told about Black people and how those lies continue to undermine Black folks in America and all around the world. So you have to stay tuned, folks, because as I always say, we're going to be doing more than just scratching the surface. Here on Skin Deep, we're talking all about lies and stereotypes with author, speaker, and educator, Dr. Omokongo Dominga. We'll be right back after these messages with information you just can't afford to lose or miss here on SiriusXM Radio, Channel 141, HUR Voices. Do you ever find yourself lying in bed at night, feeling the weight of your financial struggles pressing down on you? Are mounting debts, student loans, and the uncertainty of these post-pandemic times holding you hostage from living the life you truly deserve? I want you to know that there is a way out, and it starts with the Money Talks Emergency Savings Challenge and Toolkit. This program was created for ambitious people who refuse to settle for less than they deserve. It's about empowering you to break free from the chains of financial limitations and create a life of abundance. Remember, you're not alone on this journey. But don't wait. Breakthroughs happen when action is taken. Go to MoneyTalksChallenge.com to reclaim your financial power today. That's MoneyTalksChallenge.com. This is Sharon Morton here on SiriusXM Radio, and I want you to love yourself, be yourself, embrace your natural self with Talia Wajid hair care products, specifically formulated to provide naturally curly, coily, kinky, and wavy hair textures with moisturizing, conditioning, and cleansing excellence to support healthy, flourishing, and beautiful natural hair for men, women, and kids. Go to Talia.com for products that are nutrient-rich with vitamins, minerals, fiber, and protein to achieve your strongest, healthiest hair. Protect, maintain, and keep your hair stronger and healthier than ever before with Talia Wajid Natural Hair Care Products. It's your hair, your regimen, and your style. Go to Talia.com for healthy hair and a healthy, beautiful you. That's Talia, TALIAH.com. Welcome back to Skin Deep here on SiriusXM Radio. Before the break, I was telling you about our guest, world-renowned speaker, educator, and author of the book Lies About Black People, Dr. Omokongo Dominga. Welcome to Skin Deep, Dr. Dabinga.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to have you. I've heard nothing but great things. Everybody was like, you've got to get him on the show, and you are here, so thank you.
I appreciate it.
So you're known all over the world for being very transparent, and your book, I have it here, Lies About Black People. What was your inspiration to write this book, and why now? Because, you know, stereotypes about us have been here since we were brought here from the motherland. So tell me, why now is this book needed more than ever?
So when I was writing this book, I originally was writing it for white suburbanites who were engaged in the Black Lives Matter movement, but things were starting to fizzle down a little bit and people wanted to go a little bit more beyond the slogans and get a little bit more knowledge. But a funny thing happened when I was doing this research, I sent out a message to people asking them, what were the lies that were told to you about Black people? And the majority of people who responded were Black folks who were telling me about lies told to them. And so this book came out now because, given all of the misinformation and disinformation that is out there about our people, we need to be part of a movement to correct the record for anybody who's out there willing to fight for our causes. And there's nothing worse than someone going out there to fight for our cause and they're not armed with the proper information. So that's why I had to do this book right now.
Yeah, I really like that. In the book, you have stories from people, and it's, you title it, My Anti-Racist Journey. Mm-hmm. And I expected it to be, you know, journeys outlined by whites. But like you said, there's a lot of Black folks in here because we were all raised with these stereotypes and all, we believed a lot of them. I know when I was coming up, I didn't see anybody on television that looked like me. All of the shows that I watched, I Dream of Jeannie and Tarzan and My Three Sons and Andy Griffith, Brady Bunch. They were all filled with white folks. I didn't really start seeing any Black people until the 70s with the comedies, you know, Sanford and Son and What's Happening and that kind of thing. And I think I was a really little girl when Julia came on, the first Black nurse that was played by, please tell me her name. Oh my God, I'm about to be in trouble because she's one of my favorite actresses. But, you know, there was no one that looked like me. And so I believed all of the stereotypes or that only white folks had great lives, only white folks could be married, only white folks lived in nice homes, only white folks were educated, all the while not even thinking, hey, my mother and my grandmother graduated from Howard University, and there are a lot of Black folks that went to college.
Right.
But I started seeing that until the 80s with the Cosby Show. So, you know, how do you come across people to include in your book that are not only telling you about their anti-racist journeys, but what are they doing about it? And I do like some of what you have. Some of the folks are actually outlining what they've done to combat racism.
Yeah, there's so much in there. You know, the book has the anti-racist journey. It also has some of my original poetry. It also has activities that people can do at the end of each chapter. But the anti-racist journey, it was therapeutic for a lot of people. Because they talked about what they had to do from a young age, or maybe they started in adulthood to counter the lies. You know, Dr. Michael Robinson in the book talks about how he's being the first to go to college and how so many people around him in his own family told him that we don't go to college, that's not a thing, you know, for us. And how he had to fight to get to where he is now, and how members of his own family came to apologize to him afterwards, after he attained the success that he has now, and started to reflect on their own lives. What could they have done if they hadn't bought into the lies? Dr. Richard Booth, you know, another person is in there, someone who I've known actually since the second grade, and watch his entire journey. It was predicted as Black men growing up in the crack epidemic that we were going to be dead or incarcerated before the age of 25. And to continue to fight through that, you know, they talk about having to read more. They talked about having to remove themselves from their community and put them surrounded by people who are going to celebrate them and not tolerate them, and surround themselves with educators who had high expectations, and grounding themselves in their ancestry. Like you talked about, you know, with your family, seeing people who have come before you who have attained success and using that to help them break the lies.
Yeah. But even though my family was educated, I was still like made fun of at school for the way that I spoke. It was like, oh, you talk like a white girl. I don't believe I sound white. What does white sound like? You know what
That's
I'm
right.
saying? So That's I was right. made to feel a certain type of way for being able to enunciate, basically. That's all it was as far as I was concerned.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
But that just goes to show, I mean, it was almost like, you know, you were taunted or bullied if you were smart. Like only white people can be smart. And this was Black. These were Black kids who apparently heard it from their Black parents that, you know, only white people can be smart. Only white people can enunciate. How do you intend to break down all of these stereotypes when they've been around since we've been here? I mean, that's, and they are being promoted even more now. I want to talk to you about our own people promoting these stereotypes, but go ahead. How are you going to
answer? No, absolutely. And I know you've also heard this one that we've all heard growing up. If you want to hide something from Black people, put it in a book, right? So there's always this discouragement from wanting to advance ourselves. And what I do in the book is I point out that each chapter is based on a particular lie. And I break down the origin of the lie, and then I talk about how to challenge the lie. So for example, the idea that Black people can't live here, it's a whole chapter on real estate. This idea that it's not about Black people can't afford nice houses and things like that. It's that we get denied the loans. Our communities get redlined. And it's not that our houses are worse than white communities. The houses were devalued simply because we were Black. I talk about the appraisal industry and how if you got African pictures and Black Jesus and everything hanging up in your house is going to get devalued at $200,000 more than if you remove everything and have a white person pretend to be the host, because the appraisal industry is like 97% white, right? Yeah. So we talk about those. We talk about how there were on the books, housing policies, HUD, all of these that deny Black people the opportunity to be great. I have another chapter that's just focused on swimming and how Black people were denied those opportunities and how white communities would rather let community pools be filled with cement and watch their own kids cry rather than let Black people swim in them. And those types of opportunities denied created part of the reason that Black kids are three times more likely to drown than white children. I have another chapter where I talk about pain and, Black women, and do you feel pain, and talking about the pregnancy, mortality. It's not that Black women die at three times the rate of mortality because they're Black women versus white women. It's because the hospital system mistreats them because of the stereotype that Black people can tolerate pain. So I look at how that came from slavery and how that still plays out today. If we want to challenge the stereotypes, we have to understand where they came from. And that's what I talk about in the book.
So back to two of those things, I remember seeing something, I don't know if it was on what news station it was on, where this Black couple, they had the appraisal done and it was in fact $200,000 less than the same house in a white neighborhood. So they had their white friends to come over and they put all these white, they took all their Black stuff down and had the, pictures of the white family, and the appraiser did in fact appraise the house $200,000 more. So you're right. And then with swimming, I mean, my daughters were swim champions. They were on a Black swim team, all Black swim team. They were lifeguards for all of their teenage years. And all they knew and saw were Black swimmers. So they didn't even know about this stereotype. But that's because we live in, a Black community where, everybody is moving forward and forward thinking and that kind of thing. And there are communities like that around the country. I remember telling a friend of mine who was white, she was coming over for lunch or something, coming from out of town. And I said, oh, you're going to, I live in a Black neighborhood. And she kind of stopped, she was a little nervous. Mm-hmm. And then when she came, she was like, oh, I thought you said you live in a Black neighborhood. I said, I do. All of my neighbors are Black, So it was almost like this can't possibly be a Black neighborhood. But yeah, to me, it's going to be hard to conquer these stereotypes because not only were they started by, white people, but they continue to be promoted by whites and Blacks. And so how do you get Black people to unlearn these stereotypes?
One of the things is representation. I talk in the book about so many Black people, throughout history who have, fought to challenge the stereotypes. People in not just in the past, but in the modern day, people like Simone Biles and the like, giving real life examples, our kids will be what they see. And if they're not given an opportunity to see the greatness, whether we're talking about not just, sports, things like swimming, but, through COVID vaccines and what we did there, through Black inventions, through people who are getting off there in the field of space travel and the like, we need to show them. And I'm part of that community that wants to show them what's possible. Talking about, the Howard swim team and what they're doing across the country to smash records. If we don't show it to our kids, and show it to other kids, nobody else will. Like, this, what we're talking about now is so important for our kids primarily, but it's also important for white kids, for Asian kids, and so on and so forth,
yeah,
who have never grown up seeing us in anything outside of a rapper, outside of an athlete, or something like that. And so they're going to grow up working with us, you know, with low expectations. That was one of the problems with Obama. So many people who never worked with a black person now had to be prepared to be led by one. And it completely flustered them. So they need to see these stories as well to understand that what's happening in our communities, when we talk about the lie about black people feeling more pain, that also transfers over into police brutality and the idea of we needed more bullets to subdue him. 41 shots, 55 shots, 60 shots. And that goes into slavery as well. People need to understand that it's based on a lie. And once you understand that, you can challenge that lie.
But I think, Dr. Dubinga, and we're going to talk about this when we come back from the break, I think with social media, there's more than enough examples of us doing way more than just, you know, playing basketball or, you know, being a rapper. There's so many examples of us being everything. And so I don't really know if I buy the fact that our kids aren't seeing these things. You and I maybe didn't see them as kids, but I think these kids today are seeing a lot of it. But listen, we have to take a break really quickly, okay? So, but Dr. Dubinga, before we go, really quickly, tell everybody where they can find their book. What's your website? What's your social media handles?
Yes, the book is available everywhere books are sold. You can go to www.liesaboutblackpeople.com and learn more. There's a survey you can also fill out and tell us about your anti-racist journey. And on the handles, it's just at omekongo, at my first name, O-M-E. K-O-N-G-O. And also you can follow on youtube.com/omekongo to hear more stories about lies about black people.
Sounds good. We'll be right back after these messages with Dr. Omekongo Dubinga here on Skin Deep on SiriusXM Radio Channel 141.
The Small Business Report with Carl Brown is your source for vital information to help you start, grow, or sustain your business. You'll hear expert advice from business owners.
Their biggest concern is, can you deliver? Can you deliver on time?
Subject matter experts.
With all these different free resources, there's no excuse.
And government agencies.
SBIR is one of the best kept secrets in government.
That's every Thursday at noon and Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on HUR Voices, SiriusXM Channel 141.
The 2024 Black Girl Magic Cruises countdown is on. Black Girl Magic Cruises sets sail on August 16th, 2024, following a two-day tour of Rome. Join Black Girl Magic Cruises for a seven-day journey sailing the Italian and French Rivieras. This luxury travel experience includes stops in Florence, Italy, Monte Carlo, the south of France, and Barcelona, Spain. Centered on joy, this Black Girl Magic Cruises moment is designed for fun, exploration, inspiration, and relaxation to ignite your imagination, energize your spirit, and renew your soul. For more information, call 202-384-3985 or register to learn more at blackgirlmagiccruises.eventbrite.com. That's blackgirlmagiccruises.eventbrite.com. Black Girl Magic Cruises for all your dream destinations. And we're back here on SiriusXM, and we are talking to world-renowned speaker and author of Lies About Black People, Dr. Omekongo Dubinga. Before we continue again, Dr. Dubinga, tell us where we can find your book.
You can find books, my book everywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, local bookstores. And you can also go to www.liesaboutblackpeople.com and see that. The audiobook is also going to be coming as well. It's read by me. And so I hope you know we'll support that as well. And follow me online at Omekongo.
Okay, sounds good. Listen, before the break, I was talking about social media, how there are so many examples of Black folks doing phenomenal things. And there is no reason for anyone to say that Black people can't swim, Black people don't make for good gymnasts, Black people can't play tennis, Black people aren't mathematicians, aren't architects, aren't doctors. There's millions of examples on social media. However, Dr. Dubinga, there are too many examples of Black people promoting these stereotypes. Black women, which I don't know what is happening with the depravity, with there seeming to be some celebration of depravity especially among Black women, saying the most depraved things in their music. I mean, I'm just horrified, okay? Because I would be too embarrassed and ashamed to say and do some of the things that these young Black women are doing. My mother would get the switch, okay? And I'm 58 years old, okay? She would get the switch out from the backyard. Mm-hmm. What is going on with that?
Well, the first part of what you were talking about is that you and I can get access to these positive images on social media, but the algorithms, that's what the problem is. Because if you and I are looking at speeches of Dr. King or something about Harriet Tubman, the next videos we're going to play are going to be relating to that. But if these kids are just doing like World Star or something like that, watching a fight in the cafeteria or watching a beatdown on the street, the next video is going to keep playing that. And so yeah. Even though there's more information out there, it's not being cycled to our kids to be able to find that information. And so because people want to be their own stars, because everybody has a microphone now, because everybody wants to be the next social media influencer, they see that, oh, this fight got 100 million views. Yeah. This particular dance got 20 million views. I'm going to do that. That's going to get me some attention. And so that's how they're repeating the cycles. Some people said it's just a matter of simply not clicking on certain things if we want to start to change the perceptions that are out there. But it's like computers, garbage in, garbage out. What you put in is what's going to multiply.
Okay, but what's happening with these young folks, especially these young women who feel like, you know, the only way that they can make it is to celebrate depravity? I'm not understanding it.
It's the incentive structure. You know, it's the incentive structure. People are seeing, you know, women who may have, look at female rappers, for example, as talented as all of them are, Nicki Minaj, Megan Thee Stallion, all of them. And many of them are doing great work in the community. Megan Thee Stallion has a community center. I think Beyonce started a hospital. The question is this: can a Black woman in the entertainment world in music today make it with and keep all of her clothes on, like Lauryn Hill decades ago?
Right? No, not anymore. Like Queen Latifah, like all the female rappers we grew up with.
Exactly. And it's not that we don't have them, it's just that there's not an incentive structure that puts them on the top. So people want to be famous. So they're going to do what they see. I've seen 12, 10-year-old girls on the corner with their friends, you know, grinding up on boys because,
me
you know,
too. They watch twerking.
You know, and so that's part of the problem. They're not seeing the, you know, Kazmikia Corbett, you know, who helped create the COVID vaccine. They're not seeing her be celebrated. And look at what's happening in our schools where they're already working to remove our history. I have a whole chapter in here on critical race theory where they're trying to remove our history and we already weren't getting enough as it is. And so that's being pulled away from school. And if the parents don't have the ability to show it and they're not going to the community centers, the next thing is, well, let me just pull up my phone and see what's popping on TikTok. And so that's what I'm saying. We have to reimagine the incentive structure for them. We have to actively be doing that because social media is designed to keep them where they are and to keep them celebrating depravity.
Oh my God, it's really painful for me to see. I can't even watch it, you know. Tell me how your book actually walks the reader through and helps them change the narrative or tells them what they can do to change the narrative on Black stereotypes. I don't know if I've ever seen that before, because a lot of times you do actually need handholding. Like you need to know, okay, well, what is it that I can do? I want to make a change, but I don't know where to begin. Your book actually walks them through. Give us some examples of that.
Most definitely. So there's 23 chapters in the book. The last 5 chapters are all devoted to solutions. So number one, you claim that I have a chapter that talks about this thing I call the rule of 7. You call yourself committed to diversity. Let me ask yourself 7 questions. What do your 7 closest friends look like? What do your 7 closest neighbors look like? What do the last 7 authors of the books you read look like? You got kids in your life? What do the last 7 TV shows you've watched with them look like? You go to plays, what does the cast of the last 7 plays you watch look like? You know, people can talk about, oh, I'm committed to it, but if everything you're reading is white, or if everything you're reading doesn't celebrate Black people in some way, shape, or form, how can you say that you're committed to the experience? So I give people questions to ask to start to test themselves today. I also ask, how do we increase Black representation in your organizations? I talk about how organizations can go into Black spaces to actually recruit people, whether it's Black colleges, whether it's conferences for engineers and architects and so on and so forth. I talk about that. I talk about how to elevate Black students and have cultural competency in our schools. That chapter is completely devoted to teachers to help them become more culturally competent and more culturally relevant. I talk about how to go beyond performative celebrations of the Black experience. Don't get watermelon for a Juneteenth celebration. Like, how do you go deeper than that? So I give examples of that, you know? We're talking about things that have been done.
I want to go back to the first point you made where you asked the seven questions, you know, who are the seven friends that you have and, you know, the seven books that you've read. Does that apply to only white folks? What about Black folks? Should we also be making a commitment to diversifying our surroundings? Because truthfully, let's just be honest, birds of a feather do flock together. You're going to be more comfortable around the people that look like you and that have had the same experiences as you. Sure. It's very uncomfortable to get outside of that comfortability. I mean, mm-hmm. to get outside of what you know. This is all that I've known. And so, you know, I'm comfortable here. Why should I get to know other people?
Well, it's a scale.
Not just white folks, everybody.
Yeah, it's a scale. You know, I feel like if you come from a Black community, nine times, especially if you're a Black professional, 9 times out of 10, you're already surrounded by diversity. Maybe not in your neighborhood, like you said, all Black people, but maybe you go into work or different spaces. But if you're a Black person and you ask the question, who the last seven authors that you read, and they're all white, or none of them are Black, you know, that's a problem in terms of how you view your own people, right?
What if all of them are Black? What if you've never
I think if all of them are Black, you are also denying yourself an opportunity to look at, let's say you're reading a story about, you know, South Africa and apartheid. Do you only read Black South Africans, or do you look at what people like F.W. de Klerk were saying? We have to understand different perspectives and mentalities in terms of, so yes, a Black person who reads all Black things, all Black authors, and like, you have to diversify, because how can you counter an argument if you don't understand the argument that's being presented for you? Do you have to go out on the street and get hit on the spot with it? If you don't understand what other people are thinking and seeing, you know, I teach at American University. I teach a class called Cultural Appropriation or Appreciation. And the ideas that students have about Black people coming in and the ideas that Black people have about themselves coming in,
yeah,
is very problematic. And that's because the information sources have been very limited. So we all need to diversify our knowledge. We all need to diversify our experiences.
I just don't know, you know, how that's going to happen. And I saw in your book, one of in the anti-racist journey of one of the contributors, they said that they didn't think we could overturn these stereotypes until Black people or people of color became the majority.
Yep.
What do you believe about that? What do you think about that?
I don't think that that's what it will take. I think that as America is becoming browner, I think that, you know, there are more people who are committed to diversity. I think our young people are the most diverse community, you know, we've ever had. And, you know, they are more committed to diversity and learning. I speak at schools all across the country. If people are interested, they can reach out and you do that and talk to me about that. I speak at corporations, and I'm seeing people every single day who are committed to having diverse experiences. And I don't think it needs to have Black people just be in charge and then that takes care of everything. I don't believe that. We need to reach people in the power structures where they are. History is replete with people who were racist and changed their direction, who had a disrespectful view towards Black people and then became one of the biggest partners. In the book, I talk about, don't just be an ally, be a partner. When you're a partner, you realize that your destiny is inextricably linked with ours, as opposed to just saying, I'm going to be an ally for your cause. And then when the rally's over, you go home. So I believe that when we get people to realize that our destinies are intertwined, and this isn't pie in the sky. We've seen it all the time, all throughout history.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what, Dr. Dibenga, I am going to have you back on the show because I still have like 10 more questions for you, and it's the end of the show. This is it, Dr. Dibenga. I told you it goes by quickly. Yes. Tell everybody one last time where they can find you and where they can find your book.
Absolutely. www.liesaboutblackpeople.com. You can find the book everywhere books are sold. You can also do your own survey on the website. You can follow me online at omekongo and youtube.com/omekongo. And I'd be happy to work with you, your schools, your organizations. Let's get it going.
Let's get it going. Okay, well, that's it for now, folks. I'm your host, Sharon Morton, here on SiriusXM Radio, Channel 141, HUR Voices, with educator and author of Lies About Black People, people, excuse me, Dr. Omikongo Dibinga. I hope that you use the information we provided today to combat racist stereotypes. Dr. Dibinga, it has really been a pleasure having you. There's so much more we could have talked about. You have to come back. I want to thank you for being a guest today. Folks, you can hear this show on SiriusXM Radio Channel 141, as I said earlier, on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, as well as on iTunes, Spotify, and all the streaming platforms. And check me out at Sharon_Morton on Instagram and Facebook. Thanks again for tuning in on all things that are skin deep.